I play the guitar much differently than anybody else. I don't tune it differently. I mean, I tune it normal, and then I kind of play, not complete bar chords, but and then I know all the diminished chords in between every chord, and I pretty much got that Pythagorean down.
Do you have a guitar handy? Can you illustrate this for us?
Well, yeah, but I don't know if you're going to be able to hear it.
Yeah, try me.
Anyway, there's the guitar. Anyway, the diminished chords. I'm going to show you how I play the diminished chords. Hang on a second. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it sounds great.
Did you hear the guitar?
It sounds perfect.
Oh. Well, I don't know about perfect, but... diminished chord. Another diminished chord. Anyway, I'm playing diminished chords like at the lower, on the lower string.
Interesting. So we've guessed.
And it's like, it's a real interesting chord. And then I kind of. Yeah, I'm out of tune now. But anyway, it's got a lot of diminished chords in it. In fact, these songs, they have a lot of chords in them. I made sure that I got just about every chord you can think of all in the same song.
It seems like you just unlocked what the secret ingredient perhaps is.
Yeah, I got the secret ingredient. I'm going to write it all down for people because I figure I got a lot to show them, to talk to them about.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a page long.
And so tell me about when you're writing a song, do you pick up the guitar? Do you go to the piano? Which is it?
Well, it's whichever I'm playing.
And so you just start strumming and then making a melody and making up words on top of that? Or?
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From Hollywood, the dating capital of the world, in color, it's The Dating Game. And we couldn't think of a happier way of celebrating the 4th of July than with The Merry-Go-Round. Members of the merry-go-round will be living it up during game one this afternoon. That sentimental celebration follows these important words. And here's the star of our show and your host, Jim Lyon.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Johnny, and good afternoon and welcome once again to The Dating Game. You know, regarding another July 4th, back in 1776, it was John Adams who said this happy holiday should be celebrated with pomp and parade, with shows, games, sports, bells, bonfires, and illuminations from this time forevermore. Well, since he specified games, we're all set, and so are three of the four members of the merry-go-round. So let's meet them right now, and here they are. Well, swinging happily in the popularity spotlight, turned on by their first two single hits, You're a Very Lovely Woman and Live, both of which are included in their first A&M album, Bachelor number one was born in Cromer, England, and plays bass guitar for the merry-go-round. Please welcome Rick Day. Rick, welcome. From Decatur, Illinois, Bachelor number two plays rhythm guitar, and like all the members of the group, has a knack for projecting a warmth which has made them teenage idols across America. May we meet the merry-go-round's Emmett Rhodes. Emmett, good luck.
Thank you. Emmett Rhodes was born on February 25, 1950 in Decatur, Illinois, and by the age of 15 he was playing drums in a garage band called the Palace Guard. The Palace Guard released six singles in 1965 and 1966, the last of which, Falling Sugar, has become a cult classic. Emmett also taught himself to play guitar, and he started writing songs. He wanted to step out from behind the drum kit, so he left the Palace Guard to form a new band called the Merry-Go-Round. The Merry-Go-Round released seven singles in 1967 and 1968, and also a full-length record with A&M. Single number five by the Merry-Go-Round, an absolute classic called Live, would later be covered by the Bangles.
Never.
The merry-go-round split up in 1969, but Emmett Rhodes was still under contract to A&M Records, so he started working on songs for a possible solo album. But A&M decided not to release his album, and they let him out of his contract. This left Emmett free to sign a deal with ABC Dunhill Records. They gave him a $5,000 advance, and he used the money to buy recording equipment and set up a home studio in his parents' garage. And so, for about 6 months in 1969 and 1970, Emmett Rhodes, all by himself, playing every instrument, recorded the songs that would become his self-titled album, released by ABC Dunhill in 1970. Let's hear an example of Emmett Rhodes' home studio prowess. This is a song from that self-titled album from 1970 called Long Time No See. The album is an undeniable classic, all the way through, and it's astonishing that Emmett Rhodes, playing every instrument, recorded the backing tracks on a 4-track, then bounced that over to an 8-track to record the vocals. He did it all himself. He would record 3 different instruments on 3 tracks, then bounce those down to the 4th track. Now those performances were locked in, but it freed up 3 tracks. He could record 2 tracks, bounce those to another track, and now he had 2 tracks left. So with a 4-track, you could essentially get 3 tracks on 1 track, 2 tracks on 1 track, and then you have 2 tracks left. So you can essentially record about 7 separate instruments. Then he would bounce that over to the 8-track and have 7 tracks to record vocals. Once Emmett had everything recorded, he got some help from engineers Keith Olson and Kurt Betcher, who helped him mix and master the record. Let's hear another example of Emmett Rhodes' amazing one-man band. Once again, Emmett is playing every instrument on this track from his 1970s self-titled album. This is an amazing song called You Take the Dark Out of the Night. When the album was released in 1970, it was a critical success. Billboard magazine called Emmett Rhodes one of the finest artists on the music scene today. And Billboard would later call that self-titled album one of the best albums of the decade. The album made it up to number 29 on the Billboard charts, and the single, Fresh as a Daisy, reached number 54. But it was at this point that Emmett's old label, A&M, decided to cash in on this minimal success he was having by putting out the songs he was working on but never really finished for a possible solo album with that label, A&M. So they took that music, which they owned, and released it as an album called The American Dream. Now that Emmett had some momentum and he was selling albums, number 29 on Billboard isn't bad. Now there were two records by Emmett in the stores. If people were hearing his music on the radio and they went to the record store, they wouldn't know which record to buy. Let's hear a song from that record released by A&M called The American Dream. This is Let's All Sing.
Stay. she had stayed. Well, let's all sing. La 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 la. Well, let's all sing.
Aren't you feeling better now that she has gone away?
Well, let's all sing. La 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 la. Well, let's all sing.
Aren't you feeling better now that she has gone away?
Take everything you have. Well, she's the kind of woman, turn a good man into bad.
Now don't you worry, now she's gone.
You're better off that way.
Now don't you worry, now she's gone.
Been worse if she had stayed. Well, let's all sing. La 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 la.
There was also a problem with Emmett's deal with ABC Dunhill. It required him to deliver 2 albums per year to the label. But he spent a year alone just working on his second album, Mirror. Because again, he was working alone in his parents' garage, playing all the instruments himself. Let's hear a song from that second album by Emmett Rhodes, Mirror, from 1971. This is called Love Will Stone You.
You alone. Love will stone you, but you'll come down.
And so Emmett Rhodes' third album for ABC Dunhill was not released until 1973. And it's a very different record from the first two albums. I personally don't like it as much. He pursues some different styles. There's a lot of kind of funk and maybe some jazzy stuff. It makes perfect sense that Emmett was exploring some different styles. I just don't like it as much as the first two albums. But let's hear the title track from the third record Emmett Rhodes recorded for ABC Dunhill. The album is called Farewell to Paradise. This is the title track, Farewell to Paradise.
Rest your heart, free your soul. Travel on eternity's end. As you slowly sail away, billowed clouds softly descend.
After Farewell to Paradise, it seems like Emmett Rhodes hit a wall. He was actually sued by his record label for not fulfilling his contractual obligations. He tried to move on in the music industry and become a recording engineer and a record producer. He was working for Elektra Records for a while. In 1980, he actually began to work on a solo album for Elektra, but that project was abandoned. In 2000, he completed a solo album for the Rocktopia label, but the label went out of business before they could release the album. In the end, Emmett Rhodes was mistreated by the record industry. He was basically a genius, extremely talented. Who knows what he could have accomplished? But as Emmett Rhodes explained in a 2001 interview, quote, "There were lawsuits and lawyers and I wasn't having fun anymore." Emmett Rhodes also said, quote, "I worked really hard and there was no reward."
Tears and angels cry, and the dark in all the sky, when the one you love says goodbye. Tears and angels cry, sing a lullaby, sing it soft and only sigh, when the one you love says goodbye. Sing a lullaby, dee 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 dee. When your love still is strong, when the one you love is gone.
In 2009, an Italian director named Cosimo Massiri tracked Emmett Rhodes down and produced a one-hour documentary about him called The One-Man Beatles.
I'm glad, you know, I'm thankful that that I was allowed to be an influence.
Do you agree when people compare you to, like, Paul McCartney?
Oh, yeah, because, you know, I mean, I'm just like him.
I first heard about Emmett Rhodes in high school. For years, that was one of my like calling card records. It was the record that I'd put on, be like, "I'm about to blow your mind."
I did something that was fun. That's all, and it still is. I did all this stuff when I was just a little boy, and then I got involved in it and started making money.
You know, life is not easy. Things take a piece out of you. You know, we know some of the stuff that Emmett has gone through. Some of that stuff is public record.
Perpetuity. Yeah, sign this here for a perpetuity. I was owned.
I wanna be sheltered, safe and warm.
I didn't play much. I didn't sing much. I didn't do. I worked with others on their music, and that's pretty much what I did for a long time. I think life is a wonderful thing. I really do, but sometimes I just get tired.
This led to a kind of resurgence for Emmett Rhodes, and a young fan named Chris Price ended up showing up at his house one day, and Chris wanted to help Emmett Rhodes put together a comeback album, and that's just what they did. The album, released in 2016, was called Rainbow Ends and featured guest appearances by admirers of Emmett like Amy Mann, John Bryan, Susanna Hoffs, and Richard Thompson.
Before you turn and walk away forever, before you say it's all been said, take a moment to remember the good times we had. Before you say I'm really very special, then run to another's arms. Won't you give me just a moment to right this wrong? I can't tell my heart. See why I don't trust in love. I can't tell my heart when enough's enough. When you love someone so much it hurts you, you will learn to love the pain. It's a funny thing that happens. that I can't explain. Trust in love. I can't tell my heart when enough's enough. Would really hurt me, create a wound that would never heal. Just a few words that if spoken, I refuse to hear.
I'm really glad that Emmett Rhodes got to experience that kind of rediscovery, kind of a mini renaissance. It seems like he was in a much better place when, last weekend, at the age of 70, Emmett Rhodes passed away.
Chasing rainbow winds, head up in the clouds. But my dreams would never end, but my eyes, they're open now. I wanna be somewhere far away, somewhere where I won't be afraid. I wanna be sheltered, safe and warm. I wanna be somewhere far from harm. Always chasing rainbow winds, head up in the clouds. Thought my dreams would never end, but my eyes are open now. I wanna be somewhere in the sun, getting tan, having fun. I wanna be with the ones I love, hold them close, give them hugs. God, I wanna be someone's only one, not just for now, till better comes. Always chasing rainbow winds, head up in the clouds. Thought my dreams would never end, but my eyes, they're open now.
Well, I guess I should introduce you as for the podcast, huh?
Nobody cares.
Okay. So I'm talking to Dean Falcone now. Dean, I don't think you've ever been on Rock and or Roll. I mean, I know you through Cheap Talk, the Cheap Trick podcast, but I'm sure we've talked about having you on Rock and or Roll, but I don't think it's ever happened. Now you're an old school power pop guy. Like you're from the group of musicians that were probably your peer group. You're probably all heavily influenced by Emmett Rhodes, right? Like, was he an important guy to you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's weird. I'm in that second generation. So I actually found out about Emmett Rhodes through the Bangles first album.
Right.
Covered Live. And it's like, wow, who wrote that? And I figured they did. I just wanted to know which one of them wrote it. And then it was E. Rhodes. And I thought that was funny, E. Rhodes, you know.
Yeah.
and then a bandmate of mine said, oh, he had a band called The Merry-Go-Round. And that's what that song is from. He didn't tell me anything about Emmett Rhodes' solo stuff. So I, you know, got Rhino at that point. Rhino had a compilation of theirs out. And then when I heard, you know, like Time Grows the Wiser and stuff like that, I was like, what the hell? How could I have not known about this? And then my bandmate, John Bryan, who's a big, you know, big power pop guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Found the first album and made me a cassette. He said, go home now and listen to this. And that was that. It's right. Like, whole. And then, you know, it's all him. And it was just like, holy shit. You know, the Missing McCartney 1968, 69 album.
Yeah.
Every song. Jeez.
Live is one of the best singles of the 60s, in my opinion, especially in terms of not from one of the, like, the major bands. You know? I mean,
and it really sounds like one of the major bands. I mean, sounds so good. I was just listening to that recently, obviously, and the recording's great, but the energy level.
Yeah, the melodies, the melodies and the hooks in that song are unbelievable.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I was thinking about how the two singles to me that really stand out as kind of being just so melodic and a little bit ahead of their time from that era are Live and It's Cold Outside. And then you see how those guys went on to become so important, so influential in the power pop, you know?
Absolutely.
And there's just something really special about those two songs, I think, that kind of stand apart from most of the other stuff, like on the Nuggets box sets and stuff.
Right.
So,
and then his first band was on one of the Nuggets, the later Nuggets.
Yeah, right? Yeah, the Palace Guard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, it must have been from Trouser Press Magazine where I got the name Emmett Rhodes, like back when I was before the internet, when I just started in the 90s, when I started collecting records and I was collecting old Trouser Press magazines. And I think there's an issue where Ira Robbins wrote about like the 10 best albums from the 70s that you haven't heard or something like that. And I think he wrote about Emmett Rhodes in there. And then I found the record, you know, that self-titled album, which is,
it's perfect. I mean, it really, there's nothing first to last song.
Yeah.
I mean, Last Song You Must Have is one of my favorite songs by anybody. It's such a beautiful song. And it's, you know, and he had such heavy lyrics. He was 19 when he started recording that album.
Right.
And the other stuff, he was 16, 17, I guess, from the very first merry-go-round. I think he was turning 17, which is crazy. I mean, to write a song like, you know, You're a Very Lovely Woman. I mean, that's at that age.
Yeah.
I mean, that's nuts. That's pretty deep and dark. Some of it's, you know, he must have some, I really don't know much about his upbringing, but I mean, he must have some dark stuff going on.
Yeah. Maybe they wrote about it in Trouser Press, but it's like the idea, when you listen to that self-titled album, the idea that he plays everything.
Yeah.
And he basically produced it himself.
Right.
Engineered it himself, did everything.
Right.
It's pretty mind-blowing because of how good that record sounds and how you would never even know that this is just one guy.
I know. I think the sound part, I mean, the final stuff, Keith Olsen, who later did Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
And Bocher from the Millennium.
Mm-hmm.
Are the guys that actually mixed it. They took his multi-track and then they would divide, you know, they would take the drums and put them through frequency analyzers. But the fact that, nonetheless, he had a four track and he had to play all that stuff.
Yeah.
He would have to put, you know, a metronome down and then put, you know, a piano or guitar and then a drum thing, then bounce those to one track, put another thing down, erase that, and then play something live when you do the bounce. I mean, you have to know exactly what you want the final thing to be. You have no choice. You have to know, oh, I want, you know, when I put the drums down to another track, I've got to put a tambourine live on it because I want the tambourine in the chorus. You have to, like, make all these decisions that are final.
Right.
There's no going back. And that's incredible. And again, he was, like, 19 at the time. And, man, and that record sounds amazing, like you said. I know that, you know, Keith Olsen had a good amount to do with the actual final sound. And I know he said that when they came to me, you know, like the singing sometimes is overmodulated. He recorded a little too hot sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
They had to deal with that kind of stuff. But, man.
Yeah, didn't he record the backing tracks on a four track and then bounce that mm-hmm. over to an eight track so he could do
exactly,
the vocals?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's insane.
So that's why, you know, the vocals sound amazing on that because he had four pure tracks.
Right.
And then unless you wanted to bounce down a couple of the harmonies, but he could double track the lead vocal and then still have, you know, because the harmonies on that album are so beautiful. You know, all the somebody made for me, all those counter melodies and all that beautiful stuff and all the fuzz guitar doubling the bass. And there's really not a thousand things going on, but there's always that one extra thing. It's like, what is that? Cool. Oh, there's a harmonium in there. He made, you know, and he didn't do that, you know, using the eight, you know, he did that on the four track, making all the music, you know, only on the four track. So he did so much bouncing.
Right.
To make it go down to, you know, the four track onto the eight track.
No, yeah, I've bounced stuff on a four track. So.
So, you know.
Yeah.
You know what you lose. And actually the four track he had was one of those big old Ampexes where you couldn't record on track one and two, then bounce it to three. You had to record on one and three. I mean, it was just weird how the wiring of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So you really had to, like, just really be in your head thinking how you're going to get your final, you know, your final product there.
Yeah, and I guess he had a record deal when he was making this, right? So I guess he was doing it this way just so he could have complete freedom and control over it.
And I can't believe, you know, he had an A&R guy who let him do that.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing because they gave him, you know, the advance and he bought more, you know, the equipment with that advance.
Right. Yeah, it is amazing they let him do that.
Yeah, because no one, you know, at that time, no one was really, I think the only person I can think of that recorded one-man band style stuff before him that got released was Eddie Cochran, maybe, and Gene Pitney. Who played a lot of their own, you know, played most of all their own instruments. But those were in a studio. Those were in home recordings.
Right. Didn't McCartney do that too? McCartney?
That was later.
That was later. Okay.
Yeah, he did it because you think he started recording, Emmett Rose recorded his first album starting in 69.
Right.
So. Right.
So he was doing it before McCartney. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know how, I know they both came out in 70.
Right.
But I don't know how it played, but he was definitely recording before McCartney. I mean, the Beatles were still going.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think Let It Be came out the same time as the Emmett Rose self-titled album, roughly.
Yeah. Yeah, McCartney always comes up with Emmett Rhodes, but I think more than anything, it's just because his voice does sound like Paul McCartney's in certain songs, especially.
Yeah.
But
he's a fan, but again, your timbre. I used to play with this guy. And he had an amazing voice, but he just sounded like John Bon Jovi. He wasn't a John Bon Jovi fan.
Yeah.
But no matter what he tried to do, if he sang like, you know, a Kink song, it sounded like John Bon Jovi singing a Kink song. It was just in his, it's what are you going to do? And that's what a frustrating, you know, luckily, Emmett Rhodes is a huge McCartney fan. And obviously, he puts a little English accent early on.
Yeah, definitely
had a thing. So he wasn't doing himself any favors if he didn't want that to happen.
Right.
But the thing is, you know, he also has a lot of Harry Nilsson kind of things, like Holly Park, you know, isn't really, to me, Penny Lane as much as it is the Harry Nilsson.
Well, yeah, I mean, in 1970, there wasn't as much stuff to be influenced by.
Right.
You know, there wasn't a whole lot.
Right.
So,
these guys were starting it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've said before that sometimes I get annoyed. I love Big Star, but sometimes I get annoyed by how they're the only band that got rediscovered and got a renaissance. And then a guy like Emmett Rhodes or a band like Badfinger...
Right.
Never got the same kind of recognition that Big Star did, even though they're just as good or arguably better.
No, absolutely. And, you know, Badfinger actually had actual hits.
Yeah.
And, I mean, in our world, like musical musicians, they all know, you know, the deal. But Emmett Rhodes, at least, you know, I'm so happy that before he passed away, that he knew how loved he was by so many like heavy musicians and stuff.
Right.
Who really, you know, obviously he was pretty disgruntled and at later on, but you know, and hopefully, you know, the people that covered made him some money. I think that, you know, hopefully the Bangles got some money for him. And, you know, I've always had some projects. I just saw that he did, he was involved with the recording of, Up Your Nose with a Rubber Hose for Welcome Back Cotter for the album. He was involved with records like that when he wasn't doing his own stuff. Somebody just posted that. Got to work with Emmett Rhodes once and was doing this. And then there was, he posted that song. I was like, well, that's you know, pretty cool.
Yes, friends, there are times in life when you reach a point of conflict with one of your fellow human beings. When this does happen, is yelling and screaming the answer?
No.
Is foul language or physical violence the answer?
No.
There is a new answer. So the next time one of your brothers or sisters is mean to you, I want you to take my advice. Let your arms dangle loose at your sides. Take a deep breath. Smile and say,
up your nose.
Up your nose.
I mean, doesn't it seem like anyone who likes Big Star would like, especially that self-titled Emmett Rhodes album? It seems like...
You'd think so.
Yeah. And so, yeah. But for some reason, he never got that kind of mystique attached to him. You know, something like Big Star gets this kind of vibe or whatever, and then it just kind of steamrolls.
But that was a slow burn for Big Star, though, for sure.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, I'm old, so I don't know. I feel like it really kind of happened in the mid-90s for biggest, you know, to people. I know in the 80s is when it started, because that's how I heard it, you know, early 80s is when I heard of them.
Yeah, and they were like underground. They were more like the musicians thing the 80s, and then that CD came out with both albums on it.
Right.
I mean, the first I heard them was when my friend had that CD early mid-90s. He had CD.
Yeah. Yeah, but not Emmett Rhodes. I mean, that's still a name. You know, I was just talking to somebody this morning, a friend of mine who's just a little bit older than me, and I said, because I'm trying to find out if people in the generation above me had heard him when he came out, because that album went to 29 in the chart, which is pretty big, and it had radio play. So I had, you know, I asked about five friends, and three of them actually said, yeah, I heard it and bought it. And a friend of mine hit me to it, or a sister hit me to it. And then two, like, no, never heard of them.
Right. Well, so you said you first discovered them because of the Bangles.
Yeah.
So what year did that record come out? That's 84, like...
84.
Right.
I turned 20. And actually, we saw them on my birthday, and they played it. And actually, I saw them before I had the record. And it's like that song that went out, bought the record, and that song was the one that really stuck with me for some reason. Well, not for some reason, because it's great.
Yeah.
And I saw, you know, and went down that road. And it's funny, I know I have a lot of friends that discovered Big Star again because of the Bangles covering September Girls.
Yeah, that's another. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, they cover that too.
I think it's the Posey guys.
Right.
I think they got through the Bangles. So yeah, the Bangles should get bonus points.
Yeah. Because I had the impression I mean, you know, I'm obsessed with the whole power pop thing that happened in the late 70s, early 80s. And I would think, don't you think most of those guys were Emmett Rhodes fans? Or
they
was...
Have,
yeah.
It's such a small world. Like, once you get in there, you know, I think that things just start popping up. Or you always have the one older person, you know, one person. Because, you know, obviously back then we didn't have the internet. So it was record store people, Gold Mine, and like you said, Trouser Press. And Trouser Press, actually, Ira Robbins, that's, I think, the first time I ever saw anything about Cheap Trick was I saw a picture of them, and Ira Robbins had, you know, written an article on them early on.
Yeah. He was on board.
Yeah.
Right away. So, yeah.
Another guy.
So you never met Emmett Rhodes?
No, but I had a lot of friends that played with him and met, you know, met him. I mean, I think it's just a matter of not being an L.A. person, unfortunately.
Right.
Because if I was out there and when he was doing that last album, I would have, you know, I would have stepped on people's feet to get in there. For sure.
Yeah, John Bryan was involved, right?
I hope he was happily to, you know, he was, again, you know. And it's always fun, you know, when I have, you know, when you're kids with somebody and you see how much they love somebody and later in life that they get to work with them.
Yeah.
Always such a, my friend Ed, when we were 17, he gave me this cassette of Graham Parker, and you know, I knew a couple songs, and he was like the biggest fan at a young age. And you know, he ended up later on touring with them. And to go see somebody like that, you know, playing with their hero, it's crazy how these things happen.
Yeah.
But no, fortunately, I didn't, you know. And I love that, you know, the last album was great. I just wish that Emmett Rhodes played on it a little bit more besides just singing. You know, that was the whole charm of him, you know, him playing all the guitar parts and all that stuff. So I kind of missed that on that.
Yeah, I was listening to the last album, and the last song is the title track, and
yeah,
that song now is, it's got the same kind of emotional heft as Keep Me In Your Heart. It was like as powerful to listen to it.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit, this is brutal to listen to that song. Well, I guess it was the day that he died that I was listening to it, and it just made me think of Keep Me In Your Heart by Warren Zevon, because that song too, there's that scene in Funny People when Seth Rogen plays that song for Adam Sandler when he has cancer, and Adam Sandler's just like, you fucking idiot, because that song is just so brutal. It's an amazing song, but it's maybe the most powerful song in existence at this point.
Yeah. And especially in connotation for all, you know, like you know, and like when anybody passes, it's every, you know, Live Till You Die and all these other, the heavier songs. Like I was mentioning the song before, You Must Have, which is the last song on the self-titled album. That song always broke my heart, but now I hear it and it just destroys me now.
You must have for every raindrop a ray of sun. You must have for every teardrop a smile for someone. To get by, to live your life. You must have for every raindrop a ray of sun. You must have for every gray sky. You must have for every love lost, a love that's new. To get by, to live your life. You must have for every gray sky blue. I've been alone too long to feel right. I've been alone too long to say.
There's just something about that self-titled album, and I think it really goes back to the fact that his vision of it was to make it by himself in a garage, because he really was trying to create something there.
Yeah.
And sometimes an artist, they just have this collection of songs that there's just something magic that happens. Like, you notice it, you're like, why is this album so much better than their other albums?
Because
it's just something happened.
They're in a zone.
Yeah, they have the songs all go together.
Right.
They work thematically. They wrote them all together in some kind of creative burst, and for some reason it just all comes together. And Yeah.
It's a short time. Like you said, it's a burst, and it's there's not a lot of time between, like Pet Sounds is one of those, it's a pretty unified thought. It's definitely, I know some people have said it could be a concept album. But anyway, the flow of those songs all work together. Odyssey and Oracle, like that. They wrote those songs fast. They recorded it fast. There's a, ebb and flow, to that album. Nothing's out of place.
Yeah, I mean, I like Mirror, but there's something about that self-titled record that... There's not a lot of albums that, like you said, every song, it's all the way through.
Yeah.
It's on target. Really captured something,
right.
And he kind of obsessively made that record.
Right.
And obviously he knew exactly what he wanted to do with it. And he wanted to have the freedom. He wanted to play all the instruments because he didn't trust anybody else to do it.
No.
He wanted to do it. He wanted to create this thing.
And, even like Keith Olsen, who was overseeing it as he was going to mix it and kind of helping him out, because he would, Emmett would ask advice from him, like how to do some certain things. And Keith Olsen would be like, well, let me come down. I'll help you out. He goes, no, you can't come here. I don't want anybody here when I'm recording. He was like adamant. He's like, no, nobody can be here when I'm doing it. And God bless him for sticking to his guns, because, it's easy to cave. But you're not sure exactly what you're doing, and that like you said, that's part of the magic. It's a thing.
It's evidence that he had a vision. He knew that he had to do it on his own because he knew exactly what he wanted to do, and he didn't want any interference. He wanted to build that thing from the ground up, kind of obsessively, and do it. And that's there's the story of how he had this record deal where he's supposed to deliver 6 albums in 3 years and he couldn't do it because...
Of course he couldn't do it.
Yeah.
How many songs did he have in those 3 years? Think about it. He had all the 90% of the merry-go-round songs, all of the songs that are on American Dream, which I think only 2 or 3 overlap from merry-go-round songs, and then all the songs on the self-titled album, which started recording in 69, so the songs are written.
Yeah.
So between 67 and 69, he had all those songs, and he was a kid.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Man.
He was obviously somebody who should have had a much longer, more prolific career, and he was basically destroyed by the record industry. So I guess it's one of those classic tales of a... Like I always say, why indulge a genius?
Right.
I mean, if you're going to indulge somebody, if you're going to let somebody just do it at their own pace and just give them free reign, who more than a guy like Emmett Rhodes? Just let the guy create, but instead he got all these lawsuits and he just got driven out of the industry, basically, and gave up on it. And it just kind of devolved into that bitterness, which is understandable.
Yeah.
But to think about what, how many more songs could have come out of him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, if he wrote at a natural pace.
Yeah.
And wasn't just trying to, and then trying to have a life, as well, and then be married or try to anything else. You can't do anything when you're, trying to make that kind of, pressure, under that kind of pressure.
Yeah. Well, maybe he'll have his renaissance now.
Yeah. Well, I am blown away. And I know a lot of people that are going to like this, but you just see, in my Facebook feed and Instagram over the last couple of days, the outpouring, But, it's funny because I wish to God people like Stone Temple Pilots, the guy that writes most of the song, Robert DeLeo, I think his name is.
Mm-hmm.
He pinched the beginning of their song Plush from Somebody Made For Me. He's a big power pop guy.
Uh-huh.
He loves, he's down the road of all those artists. And I remember reading some interview with him in Guitar World, talking how he nicked from some guy called Emmett Rhodes, who he's a big fan of, the intro of Plush. And then if you listen to the both of them, you can totally hear what he did.
someone special just for me. Somewhere someone special must be. Somewhere someone special just for me. Somebody made for me, somebody made for you. Somebody made for me, somebody made for you. Ask and you receive. God in heaven, won't you help me, please?
I just wish somebody like that would say, hey, I'm going to stick him in the writing credit.
Yeah.
Because this guy doesn't really have anything.
Yeah.
And think how that album sold so much and that song was so huge, if he actually gave him a small piece of it.
Yeah.
It's like, man, help your heroes.
Well, do you have anything else you want to say about Emmett Rhodes?
Just that he was a great band.
Yeah. He sure was.
Hey, BJ, thanks for having me on. This is AD from the Shabby Road Records Show. It's good to be on here, and I appreciate you reaching out to me to talk about a little bit about Emmett Rhodes. It was a sad day when I heard about his passing the other day, and really shook me to the core. I was a huge, huge fan of Emmett Rhodes from the very first time I heard his self-titled solo record came out in December of 1970. I was 11 years old at the time, and I remember distinctly in the back seat of my dad's car with my older brother, who was 12. The Beatles had just split up, and it was devastating. I was a huge, huge Beatles fan, and that was the soundtrack of my youth. And when they split, it left a big gap, obviously, in my little musical soul. It was a local radio station, and they had what they called the new, what they thought was the new McCartney album. It had arrived, like in so many other radio stations, unmarked as a demo, and people just assumed that it was McCartney just because of the way it sounded. Well, they played a couple of tunes from this mystery album, and I remember being so excited that there was new, quote-unquote, Beatle music. This kind of was the case for a couple of days until the cat was let out of the bag that this was indeed a cat named Emmett Rhodes, which was shocking. I couldn't get out to the music store. I couldn't pedal my Schwinn Stingray with a banana seat and sissy bars and monkey bar handles. I couldn't pedal that damn bike to the music store fast enough. I went to that record store and picked up that album as soon as it was available. And honestly, probably my favorite, quote-unquote, solo album ever made. I guess there are a lot of solo albums, but, you know, you could take, well, McCartney's first album, for instance, the one with the cherries on it. Self-produced, everything was written, Paul played all the instruments, and that, to me, is a true solo album. And McCartney's was a great album. I think Emmett Rhodes is probably the best of all in its class like that. Emmett recorded it on 4-track in his parents' garage. He did all the instruments, all the voices, and produced the record ultimately. You know, there were, once it got to ABC Dunhill, there were other hands in the pot, but essentially this was a completely self-made record, and it stands the test of time more so than I think most any other record of its kind. The songs are introspective. They're very personal. They talk about happiness. They talk about pain, loss, and everything in between. So it's a very emotionally broad album, lyrically. There are some very dark songs on there, dark and brooding, but there are also some songs that are just as happy as any music has ever been. Fresh as a Daisy is one of them. One of my personal favorites. You Take the Dark Out of the Night is a great song. Melodically, I can't think of a record that stands up any higher than this record. There are some great records out there that are, I would say, on par with this, but I think that this one just edges the rest of them out. And the loss of this brilliant, brilliant artist, this criminally under-recognized artist, I think, is the true crime here. So, BJ, I just want to thank you for allowing me just a second or two to sing the praises of this brilliant, brilliant artist, especially that iconic solo album, the self-titled 1970 release, Emmett Rhodes. But, I mean, before that, he played in a band called the Merry-Go-Round, and they were, you know, kind of psychedelic pop, and he put out The American Dream, which is an amazing record. I believe it came out just prior to the self-titled Emmett Rhodes album, and he's put out some things after that. So I've quite a few of his records, and I enjoy each one. But if you're looking for the most, in my opinion, the most iconic and, to me, important solo album of all time, it's got to be the Emmett Rhodes self-titled 1970 release. Man, with that, I just say, Mr. Emmett Rhodes, rest in peace, sir. Thank you for the beautiful, beautiful gift that you left us. I'm getting emotional because this record means a lot to me. So I'll sign off before I sound even more like a goofball. But anyway, BJ, much love, my friend, and thank you for putting this together. All my appreciation and best wishes for you, my friend.
It's been a long road for you, and the way that you've dealt with it is kind of mind-boggling. It's
But I'm a depressed person, just in general. I don't know how what you're getting to, but I'll tell you right off the bat that I'm so disappointed.
Disappointed in the world, or?
Yeah, disappointed in the world and myself and the rest of the world. Just disappointed. You know, I.
So you
I like cosmology. You know, I know what E equals MC squared means. Do you?
No.
See, there you go. Now, see, I think that's important. I think E equals MC squared is important. And it's like something that everybody should know what it means. Do you know why the sun shines?
It's a giant ball of burning gas.
E equals MC squared.
Let's pick a song from your first record to play. What's your favorite song off there? How about that?
I don't know. I don't remember. You want to give me a list?
I have to say the things I feel.